Okay, well, tonight we're on the Sunday night meeting for those listening on the podcast, and it's June 11th, and yesterday was AA's 82nd birthday. And tonight we are going to be reading We Agnostics, and I'm going to try to cover, but we'll see. I'm going to try to cover 47 to 51 so we get to Columbus. But we may not get to Columbus today, because Columbus symbolizes the whole program. And we left off last week on page 47, and We Agnostics is written for several, there were several purposes to this chapter. One is to give us information about how to break our old ideas about a higher power and a relationship with the higher power, give us some questions to answer about what we think about our higher power and where our higher power is. And we ended last week with the second step in the big book, which is on page 47. Does it say, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? And that's all that's required. The second step isn't complicated. Do I believe? I don't have to know. I don't have to have proof. Am I just willing to believe that there's something that can help me, that's not me? Because if you've taken your first step, you know you can't help yourself. You have no hope for yourself fixing this. So the second step is a natural progression of that, and they use the word believe, and it says, as soon as a man can say he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. It is repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. We talked about that last week. We're building a structure through which we can pass to freedom. We're starting down a path, and the path requires that we build the structure and pass through it. And the foundation of this arch to freedom is willingness. And we become willing because we have been completely defeated. And we're desperate, and we want to change, and we know we have to change, and we're willing to do anything to go to any length to change. And if you're not willing to do that, then you're not going to do the rest of the steps. And then, having said that, you want to believe that there's a power greater than yourself, and you're willing to believe that. It says, came to believe up there. How do you come to believe? You come to believe because you see other people who have done this, and they have a relationship with God, and their lives have changed. So based on that, you can come to believe. But in the beginning, all you need to do is willing to believe. You don't even have to... And so the meetings and people who have done the steps, were it's designed to help you be willing to believe. If you go to AA, they have a program of recovery, and you're willing to believe that that program will work for you because it worked for them. And that's the only really requirement to get started. And so the cornerstone, the keystone of the arch we're going to read is the decision in step three. And then the rest of the steps, we move through the arch to freedom, 4 through 9. And then in step 10, we're in the world of the spirit, and we've passed through the arch. And then 10 and 11 help us stay down that path, and we're not back to where we were when we began in a self-centered existence without God. And so it says, that was great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. And there's a difference between faith and belief in the big book. I actually looked up the definitions. Faith implies trust. And belief, you start out with, you believe. And Joe and Charlie were the ones that I think gave this information to AA with the way they explained this chapter. And the whole process of recovery is, in the beginning, you can only believe because you don't know. And so you start out with belief, and then when you take the actions and you have a result you have trust, and then you have faith. So if you've done the deal, it says suddenly we realize God is doing for us we cannot do for ourselves, right? Suddenly, the experiment has proven us the existence of a relationship with a power in my life, and therefore I have faith. And I know that if I do the deal and tap into these spiritual exercises, that higher power is available to me. So I trust it. It says, can we trust God, infinite God, rather than ourselves? And we can't trust him in the beginning because we don't have knowledge of God. So faith in the big book implies knowledge of God. We know God's power exists for each and every one of us that's done the deal. Now, you start with you're willing to believe, and AA says do an experiment. We don't care what you think about this. We don't want your opinions. We don't want your tweets. We just want you to do this, and then you tell us the result. You tell us the result for you, and then tell us if you have knowledge of God and faith. And that's what you see when you hear birthdays. That's what you see when you hear people who've been around. They tell you how they were, what's happened, and what they're like now. So you can't start on faith, because faith implies knowledge. And all they're asking you to do is be willing to believe. That's not a big requirement, is it? And so if you're not willing to believe, and people will, you hear it. They'll come up to me after the meeting. They say, you talked about God too much. You know, I don't want to hear about God. I said, well, too bad, because this whole book's about God, but you might want to change your mind. So the rest of this chapter is trying to help us change the way we see our higher power. And we start with belief. And so you don't have to have faith, which sometimes seem difficult. People are arguing, they argue with me all the time, they'll explain things, how did this happen, this doesn't make sense, we don't care. Just be willing to believe, do the steps, and then see what happens in your life. And so it's just an experiment that only you can do. It says, but I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. Well, how can you accept as true? You don't know, you don't have any knowledge. And so in the beginning, you just start with belief. It says, it's comforting to learn that we can commence at a simpler level, just believe. Besides the seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often find ourselves handicapped by obstinacy. Anybody relate to that? Anybody obstinate, stubborn, resistant to change, doesn't want to let go of their old ideas? We're sensitive people. And unreasoning prejudice. Prejudice means prejudgment, and it's unreasoning. A lot of us can't see that we're like that. We just think it's our opinion and our way. But many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. You have to abandon that thinking or you're going to die. You're not going to make it. And how do you abandon that thinking? You're willing to change. You're willing to believe. So it all comes back to your first step. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Now they resisted. Now why did they have no difficulty casting it aside? It says, faced with alcoholic destruction. So when you can hit bottom and see the truth about your situation, that you're faced with alcoholic destruction, then you become open-minded on spiritual matters. And it says, in this respect, alcohol was the great persuader. I still love my sponsor, Cliff, who's passed away, but he'd sit there and somebody would be going on and on. And he'd say, gee, buy them more booze. And what he was saying at is, if they're not defeated, you know, there's nothing you can do. Alcohol is the great persuader. And so when you're faced with alcoholic destruction, it beat us into a state of reasonableness. So people are arguing with me about they don't like God and this and that. They're not beaten yet. They're not faced with alcoholic destruction. They still think they have a thinking, they can think this through. It's their options. They have options to think about these things. When you're really defeated, you realize you don't have any options. It doesn't matter what you think about these things. It's just, what do I need to do next? And it says, some signs this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. And you know what? Some people never give up on it. And some people never take the first step, and they just don't, they don't make it. The reader may still ask why he should believe in a power greater themselves. We think there are good reasons. Let us look at some of them. The practical individual of today is a stickler for facts and results. Nevertheless, the 20th century readily accepts theories of all kinds, provided they are firmly grounded in fact. We have numerous theories, for example, about electricity. Everybody believes them without a murmur of doubt. Why this ready acceptance? Simply because it is impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting point. Does anybody believe that if they turn the light switch on, the lights will come on? Anybody believe that, right?
Well, certainly, yes.
Well, you know why? Because you've done it, and it comes on. But if they were to explain to you the theories of electricity, and then you say, well, I don't know if that really works, and then you're never going to flick the light switch. You'll never know if it turns on or not. You see, that's what they're talking about. They say visual proof in the next sentence. Does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It has been constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world that outward appearances are not inward reality at all. That's true of so many things. The prosaic, they talk about the steel girder has all these electrons, and they're governed by precise laws on page 49. And these laws hold true throughout the material world. Now remember what we read the other night from Joe McHugh. He said that the spiritual principles in AA, they're as guaranteed to work as water is to freeze at 32 degrees. These are spiritual principles that will work if you do them. There's no doubt about it. And it says, we have this suggested the material world and life as we see it. There's an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence. Right there, a perverse streak comes to the surface, and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves that it isn't so. We read wordy books and indulge in winning arguments, thinking we believe the universe needs no God to explain it. Where our contention's true, it follows that life originated out of nothing, means nothing, and proceeds nowhere. I the one opportunity in my life when I didn't talk, it's hard to believe. It's a tough crowd tonight, by the way, for those listening. Was on this cruise, and this guy was so obnoxious. And then he was telling us how he was an atheist and this and that. And then I started, and I got a little kick under the table. Anybody know what that is? You know, and you know, I just let it go. But I mean, I really like to hear people explain the preposterousness of no creator for our world. We couldn't create ourselves. We can't even, I can't imagine it. When you look around and you see the world as it is, who can imagine? When you look at a new baby and you see the way they develop, and everything has a plan, and it starts out of two cells getting together and all that information, who can deny the existence of a creator? And the more you study medicine, the more you study of what one cancer cell does, there's constantly being more and more revealed. And so, that's something that some people just have to get over it, or else they're not going to accept it, and they want to believe that there's no powerful guiding intelligence behind the universe. Then how did they create themselves? What I really like is somebody tells me they're an atheist, and I say, well, pick up your coffee and drink it. Well, how come it got in your mouth and it didn't slobber all over your chest? How many neurons are involved in just picking up a cup of coffee and putting it in your mouth? How much information is transmitted? Billions of pieces of information. And so it says, instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists choose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and end of it all. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? Well, vain for an alcoholic, what does that mean? When we're self-centered, we think we're going to reason our way about whether we have a creator or not. Now think how preposterous that actually is when you think about it. It says, we have traveled this dubious path, here's what they beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. people of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices. We might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, usefulness, and happiness which we should have sought ourselves. So we're very critical sometimes of other people, and we blame institutions for the actions of one, and that's just a way of kind of, it's a false sense of self, a false sense of pride. So this idea of an agnostic is someone who's not willing to believe that there's a power greater than themselves is one form of agnosticism. The other form of agnosticism is where you can believe that there's a God, you can pray to God, but you've never used the God in your life because you've run the show. And I hadn't thought of that till I listened to John Charlie, and they said, so alcoholics have never really used God's power because we've relied on our power. And the only time we asked for help was when we were in deep trouble. And we said, get me out of this. And then once we get out of it, we're back on running the show again. And so they say those without knowledge of God, and we get knowledge of God through the actions of the steps, and then we have faith. So we start with belief, and then we have faith through the actions. And so there are two ways to look at agnostics. And then the third level of agnosticism is this question that I think Joe Hawk asks in his tapes. Jason can correct me, he's a big Joe Hawk fan, but he always says, what is your level of agnosticism today? And what that question is where are you running your own life? Where are you running the show? In what area of your life and having trouble in that area, and that you have no knowledge of God in that area? And think about that. And that's what we talk about fear. When we rely on self and we get fear, we're managing that area of our lives. And so that those are just some thoughts on belief, faith, and agnosticism. On page 50, the second paragraph, it says, in our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in the way each teller... Did I skip a page? No, I did. All right, good. Keep me in line. Mark's not here.
You're in line.
All right, good. Jimmy, you're second in command.
I'm on it.
In our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself. So the way you approach it and conceive it, it's not important to us, as long as you're willing to believe in whatever that conception is. Whether you agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. And this is the difference between religion dogma and the spirituality of AA. Remember the path that the highway is open, all-inclusive, open to all those who seek him. Remember? Experience has taught us that these are matters about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. They are questions for each individual to settle for himself. Now, this is a powerful paragraph. It says, on one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to, and believes in a power greater than themselves. They have had access to it, so they have knowledge of God. They have faith now. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. And that's what you're supposed to find when you come to AA. You're supposed to have people who tell you this, and then it inspires you to want to be willing to believe and do what they did and follow their path. And here it is. And I forgot, I was going to bring in the original manuscript, and I don't know if they wrote here thousands of men and women, because there were only 100 men and women at that time. But here are thousands of men and women, wordily indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe, they came to believe in a power greater themselves, to take a certain attitude towards that power. Remember that they're God and you're not God, right? And then to do certain simple things to work the steps, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. You see the results of this whole deal. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found the new power, peace, and happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. How's that for a promise? This happens soon if they wholeheartedly, notice the word wholeheartedly, it's another word that they added last week, I hadn't seen it before. This happens soon if they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. See, it's not complicated. There's not a lot of barriers between you and your trust and your relationship with God. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. This is actually a whole paragraph of promises that you could read at every meeting. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. You know, the spiritual malady, the unmanageability of our lives. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people were able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God, remember, conscious presence. Remember, our problem when we came in here was conscious separation. I separated from God where? In my mind. I told myself a story that I was in charge of my life, right? And then I lived it that way. And then we have the consciousness of the presence of God, the complete opposite, which is the spiritual awakening. You're awakened to the spirit. You have consciousness of the presence of the most important fact of their lives. They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. See, now they're talking about faith as the result of what you've done. And that's why they have faith, and you can have faith too, but you have to start on belief. Now, here we're going to get into Columbus. The world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than all the millenniums which went before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men in those days was equal to the best of today. But they had unreasoning prejudice. They had old ideas, remember? And every time somebody came up with a new idea, they didn't want to get rid of their old ideas, right? And they fought it. And it says, the spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. So that was what kept them from having the experience of new ideas. And then they stayed in ignorance. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought a round earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. So here's Columbus. And you've all heard the story of why Columbus is an alcoholic.
No.
Go ahead.
What is the story of
Columbus? What's the story, Mike?
I gotta remember.
The woman hates.
Tell us again. Yeah. Queen.
No. He didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was, and a woman paid for the whole thing. The women didn't laugh as much as the men. All right, calm down. All right, but here Columbus though is the whole deal. It's the whole process of change that we try to do in the AA program. Because there are five things you have to do to change. The first is you have to be willing to change. And what makes you willing to change? Your desperation, alcoholic destruction. You're powerless. Your life's unmanageable. You've hit bottom. Then we're talking in the second step, you have to believe you can change. And we believe that. Anybody here believe they can change?
Certainly.
The third step is you decide to change. So Columbus believed the earth was round. He wanted to get to the East Indies, Singapore and all that, and he didn't want to have to go all the way around Africa. And they didn't have the Suez Canal. It was a long way, probably half of a year. He wanted to go the other way. And he believed that. I don't know what gave him the idea, but he believed it. Now, the maps all said that that was the end of the world, you know. And they had dragons and all that stuff there, if you look at the old maps. So he was willing to believe that he could go west to get east. Then he believed he could do that, and then he made a decision to do it. And he got the money and he got the ships. So Columbus has all these ships. He's ready to go. Has anything happened yet? He's still in Spain. And then he takes the action to change. So they had the three ships, right? I think three ships. Now, Columbus was an alcoholic, so he stayed on the last ship. He wasn't on the first ship. And on the first ship, he put a special watch guy to see when the end of the world would come, so he could turn around. And so they sailed, and then they landed, and they found land. And then he went back, and he told them about it. And then when he did it again, he had faith. So we start with willingness, belief. We make a decision, we take action, and then we're changed. And that's the process of the steps in the big book. And so you can be willing and make your decision. A lot of people make their decision step three. I was at a meeting the other day and they're talking about their step three decision and how they're taking it back all day long. But you're just making a decision. How you follow through in that decision is the actions of 4 through 9, and then you live in 10, 11, and 12. And then you're changed. And then you have to keep doing it every day. And so Columbus is an example of what it takes to change. Now, Galileo, they didn't like the idea that the Earth wasn't the center of the world. You know why? Because they lived here. And so they couldn't give up on that idea. But none of the theories on the astronomy made sense with the Earth as the center. It didn't work. And so when I put myself as the center of the world, it just doesn't work. And then when they put the sun as the center of, and we went around the sun, then it all worked. And whenever I change and give God as the center of my world, then my life works. And so they didn't want to change that. They almost put him to death, but that's how that happened. So Columbus and Galileo are examples of what we're trying to do here. I'll just read one more paragraph and then we'll open it up or two. They're talking about some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients in the realm of the material. In the beginning of this year, they were afraid to put that the Wright brothers were able to fly. They sent the Charlotte papers, went to Kitty Hawk, and they were afraid to report it because there had been absolute dogma that we could not fly. And they were even afraid to print it. And they'd even proven that it couldn't happen. And they said God had reserved this privilege for the birds. And then 30 years later, there are airplanes, and then we're on the moon in 1969. I remember when the Shepard went up. That was a big deal. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but I'm old. But I think I was 8 or 9, and we had the TV. They would bring the TV into the old black and white little TV into the elementary school, 4th or 5th grade, and we watched Shepard go up. It was such a dramatic thing. And so I was worried that they said, we'll be on the moon soon. So I remember walking home, I had the Weekly Reader, and I was all worried that we wouldn't have baseball anymore because we're going to be on the moon, and you know the whole world's going to change. I mean, it sounds preposterous, but it was such a dramatic change that we were able to do that. You were Duke basketball, but I didn't know about Duke then, so there you go. And then it says, I think we'll finish with 52, the second paragraph, and we're going to read, what is the spiritual malady? What is the problem? Why we should change our point of view about God? And it's on page 52, and these are called the bedevilments. So they're talking about, you know, they said they can go to the moon. So it says, why shouldn't we apply to my human problems the same readiness to change my point of view that we have for these scientific things, right? And so it says, were you having trouble with personal relationships? Anybody answer that? When you come in here, do you remember what your life was like? Now, you could still be having these things today, because these things don't go away, but think about when you were at bottom, when things were really bad, trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control your emotional nature. Anybody have an emotional nature they couldn't control? Prey to misery and depression. Who isn't depressed when they come in here? I mean, your life is miserable. And prey to misery. Couldn't make a living. Some people still had jobs, but they didn't enjoy them. Had a feeling of uselessness, full of fear. Not some fear, full of fear. Unhappy. Anybody unhappy when they come in here? Can't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments. More important than whether you could see newsreels of lunar flight. So, in other words, if you're suffering from all this, change your mind and be willing to believe that there's a power that can help you. So these are the things that are the second part of the first step. This is the spiritual malady. This is the result of an unmanageable life, you running it. And your life is unmanageable, and you have these things going on, and you're completely defeated. And then it's the natural result of that, that you're willing to believe that there's a power that can help you. And that's AA's greatest message. Why do people come to AA? They must believe or heard that this is a help to someone. So people come here, right? They come here, and then we hope that we're good examples that this can work. That this can work for you. So I'm going to open it up now. I hope that was helpful. I enjoy, every time I read the We Agnostics, I learn more. It's powerful information.